Well, you can go ahead and be turning in your Bibles to Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10. I'm glad that we could be together again this evening. Thankful for the opportunities to see one another and to sing and to pray together and to think about God's Word as we prepare for this week. Lord willing, maybe we'll have some time off tomorrow, and I hope that that will be beneficial for you and time that you get to spend with your family. I'm going to confess to you that tonight may feel like a little bit of a technical lesson. And I don't like doing a lot of technical lessons. I don't know how good that I am at doing those kinds of lessons. I don't want to get bogged down sometimes to the point of being confusing, but I think what we're going to talk about this evening is probably necessary for us to think of from a technical standpoint. And we're going to be talking about the difference between being married and being bound by God. Because those are two different things, I think, that we will see in the Scriptures. There's a civil and a spiritual aspect to marriage and to being bound by marriage. And one way that we might realize that is when we talk about the fact that the laws of the land have to have an effect on our standing in marriage. We can't just move in together and declare that we're married. That just wouldn't work. There has to be some working within the laws of the land to make that marriage legitimate. We can't just declare, in and of ourselves that we are married. And, so we work within the civil laws, but of course the civil laws can't change anything that God has said about marriage. There's a lot of talk in our culture presently about we're going to let homosexuals marry. Well, the laws of the land can say whatever they want. It won't make it legitimate before God. And so whatever God says about that is how we will have to deal with that if we were to encounter someone who needed to know what to do about a situation that they were in. Basically, though, this is the point of what we're going to be talking about this evening. The difference between being married and the difference between being bound by God. So, the first thing that I want to look at and notice in Mark chapter 10 is that marriage is not the bond. Marriage is not what sticks us together necessarily. Let's notice what he says in verses 11 and 10 there. So here are two people who are divorced. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery against her. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery against her. And then in verse 12, if she herself divorces her husband and marries another man, she is committing adultery. And right now we're not talking about an exception at all. There is an exception that we will talk about. But if we were to just understand the general rule, God says, if you are married, do not divorce. And if you divorce and marry someone else, you will commit adultery. Now, this might be surprising, considering the frequency and the acceptance of divorce in our culture today, even by religious people. Divorce is practiced and there's no thought about it. But what did Jesus say? If we divorce our spouse and marry someone else, we will commit adultery. And I think Romans chapter 7 sheds some light on that. Wait a minute. How are we committing adultery? We've been divorced. How could we possibly commit adultery? We've been divorced and now we've married another person? Well, how does being bound, how does that work when it comes to our standing before God? Yes, the civil laws affect whether or not we are legitimately married. But that doesn't necessarily affect whether or not God will bind two people together. So, in Romans chapter 7 here, verses 2 and 3, Paul says that the married woman is bound by law to her husband as long as he lives. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law concerning her husband. So then, if while her husband is living, she is married to another man, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from the law, so that she is not an adulteress, though she is married to another man. So why would subsequent marriages result in adultery? Well, because there's a difference between being married and being bound by God. And this is kind of what Romans 7, I think, describes. Let's see if we can visualize it. So we've got a woman who is bound to her husband, bound by the law to her husband, according to what Paul says. But this same woman was described as, at least theoretically, being married to another man. Not bound to him, but married. Well, what did Paul call that? He called it adultery. And do we see why it's adultery now? Because she's still bound, according to the law, to her first husband. So you might look at Mark chapter 10 and you say, well, I don't get that. We're divorced. And the person that I'm with now, we're legitimately married. How could we commit adultery? This is why. Because when God joins two people together, he doesn't necessarily just sever the bond because they obtain a civil and a legal divorce. And I think kind of this line of thinking helps us to see that. If the marriage and the bond were the same thing, well, then every time someone got divorced, the bond that God established would be severed. And then every person would have the right to remarry. But that's not what we see in Mark chapter 10 or in Romans chapter 7. Both Jesus and Paul described instances of marriage that actually resulted in adultery. The two people who were married, according to God's laws, didn't have the right to be together. And so all that we might sum up this way, or at least think about this as we come to the conclusion of this part of the lesson. Sometimes you might hear this kind of language. Is someone married in God's eyes, or are they married in the eyes of man? And I don't really think that such a distinction exists in the Scriptures. When we talk this way, we are confusing two different things, being married and being bound by God. To me, as far as I look at the Scriptures, this is the clearer way to talk about this. There are marriages of which God approves. And then there are marriages which could result in adultery. If God has not released someone from the bond that he instituted when they were married before. So, let's talk a little bit more about this difference. What's the difference between being married and being bound? There's a number of passages that we could look at, but basically, marriage is kind of the legal, civil aspect. And in many ways, what the laws of our countries say about marriage, that's what we follow to make our marriage legitimate. Again, we can't just say, well, it doesn't matter what the laws of the land say. Let's move in together and declare ourselves married. Jesus in John chapter 4 kind of deals with all these same kind of situations that we're thinking about together right now. You remember the Samaritan woman at the well who Jesus eventually brings to believe in him as the Messiah, and he talked about her marriage situation. And so in verse 16, Jesus says, "Go call your husband and come here." The woman answered and said, "I have no husband." Jesus answered to her, "You have correctly said, 'I have no husband.' For you have had five husbands, and the one whom you have now is not your husband. This you have said truly." So when he says you have had five husbands, what is Jesus saying? He's saying you've been married five times. And now you're with someone, and he's not your husband. She's what we might say, that they've shacked up. They're not married, but they're living together. So Jesus identifies all those situations, and he says, you're right. The man that you're living with now, he's not your husband. One may be married many times, but they can only be bound to another person by God. So marriage is the legal aspect. The bond is what God does. You know, it's God that ultimately legitimizes a marriage. America may pass laws and say that two men can be married. Well, that won't make it legitimate. That won't make it moral or acceptable under the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so that is one way that we can see the distinction. Well, let's look at what Jesus says in Matthew 19. And we could have looked at this in Mark 10, but we do eventually want to talk about the exception that Jesus does give. Matthew 19, notice how Jesus describes it. So they asked in verse 3, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason at all, or just any reason? And Jesus says, well, have you not read? He who created them from the beginning made them male and female. And he said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Now, this was implied in Genesis, but Jesus goes ahead and says it explicitly here in verse 6. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. Well, who does the joining? Who takes two and makes them one? It's implied in Genesis 2 that it was God. But Jesus says it without any question here. God joins two people together. When they have the right to be married, God joins them together. And Jesus tells us not to undo what God has done. Do not divorce. Isn't that what he said in Mark chapter 10? It's the same thing. And God will not release us to be married to another person unless we divorce our mate for sexual sin. Look in verse 9. Whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. Some versions there go on to say, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. So the rule is, do not divorce. You will not be allowed to remarry. God will not bind you to another person unless you divorce your spouse for sexual sin. And Jesus says it specifically this way in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 32. For the cause of fornication or sexual immorality. In other words, it must be the reason that the marriage has ended. And if it's the reason that the marriage has ended, then it must take place before the marriage ends. See, sometimes, because Jesus, his rules about marriage, they're very serious. They're very strict. And so people split up. And then later, sexual sin occurs. And they say, well, I have the right to remarry. No, it wasn't the cause of your divorce. Sexual sin must be the reason for the divorce. And so, this is how we get in these kinds of situations. So, maybe this is helpful to you, this little graphic here of a yoke. We can look at this. By God's law, two people have the right to be married. He joins them together. Imagine them as being yoked. They become one. Now they're going to work together. All right, so we'll look at some of these other situations in just a moment, maybe get a little bit more technical, hopefully in a helpful way. But do you remember what Paul said in Romans 7? We can be bound to one spouse by the law, but married to another. And what did he say? If we are bound to one spouse and then we marry someone else, what happens? Paul says, she shall be called an adulteress. And just based on what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 10, Mark chapter 10, you can turn it whichever way you want. Let's say a man leaves his wife and marries another woman. He will be called an adulterer. If we have not been released by God, any subsequent marriage will cause us and our new partner to commit adultery. And I think this fact, more than anything else, shows us the difference between being married and being bound. So here, I'll go Romans 7 here. Here's Jack and Jill. They're married. Jill is bound to Jack. And vice versa. Jack would be bound to Jill. But for the sake of our illustration, just using the language of Romans 7, we find out that Jill is married to another man. Well, what did Jesus call that? Maybe visualizing it this way helps us to see that even though maybe they have been divorced, can't get my laser come out here. Well, Oh, well. Even though they may have been divorced, they were not released from the law according to God. And so when Jill is married to Sam, what did Paul call that? He called that adultery, right? This thing, I guess, is going dead on me here. There we go. He called that adultery. That's the problem. In our minds, we're thinking, but wait, I've been divorced. But you were not released from the law and from the bond that God committed you to when you originally had the right to be married. All right, so let's kind of keep going here and look at something that is said here in Matthew 19 and verse 9. Let's think about that. So this is a little bit of a technical illustration, but I want to see it and think about it together. One can actually be loosed from their bond while the other person is still bound. If you're still in Matthew 19, someone divorces his wife for sexual immorality. He meets the conditions of Matthew 19 and he marries another woman. He will not commit adultery, according to what Jesus says here. So maybe that might look something like this. You've got Jack and Jill married, but then Jill puts away Jack because of sexual sin, because Jack has committed sexual sin. According to what Jesus says, if Jack marries someone else, well, he's going to commit adultery. But if Jill marries someone else, she will not commit adultery. She has been released from the bond that God committed them to when they originally made their marriage. One who is put away for adultery cannot marry another person. And that just fits with everything that Jesus says here and everything that we've considered so far. Now, understanding the exception is important because sometimes we encounter people who come out of the world and things have happened in their lives and in their marriages. This happens in Africa. You know, there are some of the places we go to, there's still polygamy that's practiced, and people are trying to come out of a polygamous marriage. How do you sort all that out? We have to go through some of these technicalities with people. Who were you married to first? You know, did you have the right to be married to them? Were you bound to them? To figure out who they are actually able to be married to and responsible to, and kind of sorting all those things out. Now, I will say this. This is an exception granted by Jesus. It's legitimate. But we would also understand, I hope, that it's not like Jesus is commanding people to get divorced here. Love for the other person would necessarily have an interest in reconciliation. If you reach the point where reconciliation seems impossible, improbable, the exception is legitimate. But it's not like we should be... I'm afraid that some people may at times have approached this passage in such a way, well, you know, they're trying to get divorced as soon as possible because they want to make sure that they meet the exception and love and forgiveness. We'll worry about all that later, maybe. We've got to balance all these pieces at the same time. And I would also offer this, a thought to go along with one of the reasons why, even if the exception is met, a person is not just going to, you know, rush into divorce, because there's going to still be difficult financial and emotional consequences, even if a divorce meets the requirements of Matthew 19 and verse 9. Well, this is a technical lesson, but don't let the technicalities of it remove love and forgiveness from the discussion or from our thoughts. All right. Well, let's kind of move on to one last section here. I forgot this is dead. Who can be married? Having said all that, who can be married? Well, we can go through these kind of quickly, right? What about someone who has never been married? A man and a woman, they leave their father and mother, they're married, and everything is legitimate from a legal standpoint. Jesus tells us that they will be joined to one another by God. So people who have never been married, well, they can be married. According to Romans chapter 7, let's say I've been married before, but my spouse has died. Well, what did Paul say in Romans chapter 7? If your spouse is dead, she will not be called an adulteress, even though she's married to another man. You know, the law between a husband and wife lasts only as long as one or both of them are living. If one of them dies, that law, that bond is broken. And then, of course, in Matthew 19 and verse 9, someone puts away a mate for sexual sin. Jesus says they can be married to another person. So that we've covered all that. We can go through that kind of quickly. Here's a little bit of a different situation. What about those who are not married but bound to one another? Because, see, that happens. People get a divorce, and they don't have a right to get a divorce. It was for just any reason. Well, they're divorced. Can they marry someone else? They can't marry someone else. And we've already seen this because they're still bound by the law of God to one another. Paul calls this reconciliation in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And so this is maybe one of those areas where we would see that even after a divorce has taken place, that there would be an interest in repairing that. There would be an interest in thinking about if it would be possible to repair that. So in verse 10, Paul just repeats what Jesus says. To the married I give instructions, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not divorce her husband. That's exactly what Jesus said, and that's what Paul tells us. This is what the Lord said. In verse 11, but if she does leave, she must remain unmarried. Why? Because if she marries someone else, she'll commit adultery. Or else be reconciled to her husband. And the husband should not divorce his wife. So when, let's just say we've got two people who are married. We know that they've been bound by God. And they have a divorce that's just for just any reason. No sexual sin. They are not married, but they're still bound to one another by the law. Can we commit adultery with someone that we are bound to by God? You see, if we say that two people who are bound to one another, we say they can't be married, what we're saying is, well, if you're bound to one another by God, but if you get married, you're going to commit adultery. No, Paul said that people who divorce for just any reason had the option of remaining unmarried, depending on their situation, or also could pursue reconciliation. And I would understand, just based on what Paul says, that that would be the preferable situation. If divorce is wrong, well, then how would you repent of divorce? If possible, you would try to be reconciled to your spouse. Well, let's say that it's a divorce for the cause of sexual sin. What did we notice in that situation? Jill puts away Jack for sexual sin. She's not bound, but Jack is still bound. Well, who's he bound to? He's bound by the commitment that he made to Jill. He was not released from that just because he, you know, committed sexual sin and he was put away. If he marries another person, Jesus says he will commit adultery. So, let's apply 1 Corinthians 7 to people who have been divorced for the cause of sexual sin. They've been reconciled. That's the term that Paul uses. Jack was still bound all along. Now Jill is bound again. Are they going to commit adultery? Could Jill commit adultery with Jack because he's bound to her by God? And if Jill had the right to marry, could she commit adultery with Jack? I think the conclusion that we would come to is that in this situation, in the case of reconciliation, that no adultery is going to occur. Again, like I said, that's pretty technical. I hope that wasn't too confusing to be helpful. It doesn't matter how many times a person has been married or a person has been divorced. If we're going to sort that out, we're going to figure out, you know, what our responsibilities are, what our options are so far as marriage is concerned, we're going to have to realize and understand, who has God bound me to? Is there any person that I'm bound to and have a responsibility to? That's the person that I need to be married to if possible. Now, what happens is sometimes people divorce and the other person is not willing to be reconciled. No matter what God says, the other person's not willing to be reconciled. In that situation, Paul says a person would have the option to remain unmarried. Now, having said all this technical stuff, it may be a little bit intimidating. Maybe even you think, oh, man, I don't even know. Do I want to get married? Again, don't let the technical examination blind us to what God says about marriage. It's a great relationship. It's the greatest relationship that He's given to human beings. There's great potential for happiness as long as we're willing to let God tell us who to be as husbands and wives. The reason we have to talk about these technical things sometimes is because the world's message and the world's view of marriage and divorce and how to be fulfilled, that's very different from God's. And what happens is a lot of times people out in the world may be trying to come to Christ and they've been just, you know, just leaving broken homes. They've been married 3-4 times and they haven't known what God says about fulfillment, about commitment in marriage. But the potential for happiness and joy will always be there as long as we will listen to the Lord. You can go ahead and get your songbooks out. When God approves of a marriage, He binds two people together. And the thing that we wanted to see this evening is that there is a difference between the marriage and the bond. If God binds two people together, that bond cannot be broken by the decision of human courts. We may be divorced, but if we're still bound by a law and a commitment that we made to God, if we marry another person, we will commit adultery. Someone might say, well, how do you turn a lesson like that into an invitation for someone to respond to the gospel or maybe encourage someone to make corrections in their lives? Well, one way that a lesson like that could be turned into an invitation is, you know, there may be some people having issues in their life, and we didn't know these things. And now we have been moved maybe to act on some new information about marriage and about what God says about how those relationships work. But always, when we talk about any moral question, even when we have to get technical, what is at the root of that question and that consideration is pleasing Jesus. Because He is the one who has all authority from God. He is the one who died on the cross to save us from our sins. And so what we want to do is demonstrate our faith and our trust in Him by looking at what He says, committing to doing it, and running and keeping that commitment all the way to the end of our lives. Now, you may be here this evening and you've never committed your life to Christ. You've never confessed Him as Lord. You've never repented of the sins of your past. You've never been baptized in His name. You may be here and you are a Christian, and there's some issue related to what we've talked about in your life, some other issue in your life that you want us to pray with you about. We'd be glad to do that. Whatever your need may be, we ask you to come as we sing together.